Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. I'm Valerie Bowling, the producer of the show, and would like to welcome you to Clinical Air, episode number 8, Investigators as Partners in Clinical Research. Our Clinical Air series host is Craig Lipset, Head of Clinical Innovation, R&D at Pfizer, and our guests include Christine Pierre, President, Society of Clinical Research, Jacqueline Kent, Director, Clinical Development Information and Optimization at Eli Lilly. So for more information about our previous radio shows and conferences, please visit www.theconferenceforum.org. So welcome, everyone. Craig, I would let you take over.
Thank you, Valerie. Thank you, as always. And welcome, everyone, to Clinical Air, episode number 8. My name is Craig Lipset. By day, I work at Pfizer. And while I like to believe it's the case, the opinions that will be expressed are not necessarily those of my employer. So we've had 7 great episodes so far archived at iTunes and Stitcher and on the conference forum website. Those last conversations with really interesting people. The last episode, if you didn't get to hear it, we had Adam Dole, Presidential Innovation Fellow from the White House, and Tom Krohn from Lilly, Jennifer Wolf from Pfizer. The session before that, we had Komati Stem from Genentech and Tomas Zablinski from Transparency. Each of these episodes really following the same format, relaxed, unscripted conversations with interesting people doing some amazing things. And with that setup in mind, I'd like to introduce our first guest. And I just want to say, speaking of unscripted, dialing in pretty cold to the conversation today, Christine Pierre from SCRS, the Society for Clinical Research Sites. Hello, Christine.
Hi, Craig. Thanks so much for having me and all of the sites as part of this really innovative platform.
So, Christine, if there are still one or two people out there that do not know Christine Pierre, why don't we just back up one click and take a moment to tell us about what's led you to the work you're doing today to serving investigators.
Sure. So my background started in the clinical research space, hard to believe, but close to 30 years ago. And I've always been on the clinical research side, but always felt a very strong need to have partnerships with the industry, individuals, sponsors, CROs, et cetera. So about nine years ago, through my prior company, which is a network of sites, we started hosting the Site Solution Summit, which is an annual meeting bringing together site stakeholders to talk about best practices. And it grew from 6 to this year we're expecting close to 700 individuals that are site investigators and leaders, and then sponsors and CROs, and a variety of professional service providers that support the site's initiatives. But along the way, it became very apparent that the sites were the only ones who didn't have a voice at all of the various tables. And there are many tables that are sitting around talking about initiatives and ways to transform the industry. So a year and a half ago, we launched the Society for Clinical Research Sites, and it is a global trade organization. After a year and a half, we're representing some 14,000 investigators in 22 different countries, and we define a site as an academic or hospital organization, a physician practice engaged in clinical research, or a freestanding research site. And we're extremely proud that while we have thousands of investigators who have joined through their site, because it's not a professional organization where an individual joins, but rather the site, last week, Duke University. So we were incredibly excited that the reach and the recognition for a community and a voice for the clinical research site has now gotten such attention to attract sites like Duke and others. We also are very fortunate that along the way we have had many sponsors. Craig, Pfizer, as you know, thank you for that support, have joined SCRS as Global Impact Partners. And that has spurred an opportunity for us to create what are called site advocacy groups. And these are made up of site representatives, and they talk about specific topics that the requester is interested in and Transcelerate. And thank you to Jackie for that support. As part of Transcelerate and one of the other hats she wears, Transcelerate has approached SCRS, and we have implemented 7 SAGs that will help the Transcelerate work streams ensure that they have the site's voice included.
That's great. And we're going to get more into the into that Transcelerate thread in a minute, but 14,000 sites, that's an amazing base of constituents, but where you have such diversity from academics and hospitals to clinical practice to freestanding, I'm sure that there are common threads that relate to all, but where do they start to differ and pull apart, and how do you hold that base together? What are the types of issues where those different types of sites want different things from SCRS?
Yeah, so absolutely correct. They all do have a little different agenda. However, what we're finding, Craig, in honesty, is that you know a site, if you look at it as a business unit, whether it's part of a department or it's freestanding, there are more threads of commonality that the sites have to broach than there are differences. The differences seem to be very small thus far, but one in particular is no surprise. It's the contract terms. Our academic sites will, you know, they'll go to the mat for the couple of contract terms that are critical to them and in some instances required by their tax status to have that, whether it's indemnification or inventions, where our other sites may be more forgiving of that. Cross-indemnification is another area that the sites have a strong voice in the question of why are we cross-indemnifying Big Pharma and do some of their license their insurance allow them to actually have that capacity. Interestingly, when you talk to the non-academic sites, cash flow is a huge issue, and so they're really pushing for monthly payment terms. When they're part of a larger entity that's underwriting the day-to-day cost, they have greater leverage to be forgiving of payment terms that are quite extended. But the similarities, the need to ensure education and onboarding of the staff, compliance, all of those elements, marketing, how to bring more studies in, patient recruitment, those are pretty common, far more than we have differences.
So what's at the top of the wish list? If you look across your membership and you look outward to the sponsors of research that you interact with and sit at the table as the representative very often of that that army of investigators, what's at the top of their wish list for the message that they want you to share and make sure is getting out to those research sponsors?
I think it goes back to the financial constraints that the sites are put within. We know from our studies that 60% of the clinical research sites have less than 1 month operating capital in the bank. And so we view that as a tremendous threat and risk not only to our sponsor partners but also to our patients. So working on getting those payment terms consistent with standard business practices of every 30 days is absolutely at the top of all of their wish lists. When we migrate away from the business component and talk more about the science, it's the desire to, while understanding the constraints of what your scientific board and the FDA or EMA or whomever is requiring of you from the protocol design, the sites often feel very strongly that if we could be involved early on in giving you what is truly happening at the non-academic site, but the places where the research patients are really coming, we may be able to add an invaluable input to the design of these protocols, understanding we're all operating within these constraints of all of these regulations and some internal factors going on.
So I want to pivot here for a moment and open the Transcelerate door, introduce our other guests, and talk for a bit about that intersection of SCRS and Transcelerate and those areas of Transcelerate that seem to be site-facing and meant to enhance work at the site, and get some frank feedback if directionally that's feeling correct. So why don't we open up the line to our next guest, a friend and colleague from Eli Lilly, Jackie Kent. Welcome, Jackie.
Thanks, Craig. It's nice to be here.
So, Jackie, to guys like me, you are the queen of the Transcelerate portal, but there's probably more in your resume than that title. Can you give us a little bit of backstory about the types of work that have led you to what you're working on today?
Sure. So I've been with Lilly now for 24 years, and I began at Lilly in IT. So I have a strong background in IT, and then I moved into our medical component in 2001, where I've been privileged enough to have a lot of process-based roles within our medical component, where I've been able to now have a role, we call it clinical development, information, and optimization, where I'm bringing those two passions of IT and business process together to really take really innovative and creative technologies and deploy them into clinical development. So that's what I've been doing for about the last 2 years. We do a lot of that through unique partnerships within the industry. Transcelerate is one of those where I've gotten to spend a lot of my time trying to find those really nice sweet spots between technology and clinical development to really speed our processes on.
So other than your work with Transcelerate right now, what are you really excited about in the portfolio that you or your team are working on? What other areas of action are underway?
So we've been using, so to Christine's point earlier about how to engage the site and the investigator and the study coordinator earlier, we've been working with some, if you want to say, sensory technology, which allows us to take your traditional WebEx into a more engaging session. If you think about the widescreen panels you see, we can bring that video experience into right to the direct to the investigator's PC. So we've been doing protocol feedback directly with investigators across the globe now for about 6 months, where we allow them to engage in different components of our protocol designs, both study coordinators and investigators, and get direct feedback very early in our development processes before those protocols are approved, so we can really engage in what's important to them, both from a science and an operational perspective. So that's been very exciting. It's really reduced the cost of the travel, both from a hardcore dollar perspective and their time, which is very valuable, and really gaining some insights. And then they get to speak across each other. So the last session we ran, we had 10 investigators across the U.S. engaged, and so then they can actually talk about what's going on in each one of their sites. So that's been pretty exciting. Another piece, and it's not technology-based as much as interaction collaborative-based, is we're doing what we're calling site simulations now, where we're actually bringing study coordinators in to actually simulate maybe a first patient visit through the protocol and actually do a collaborative session across sites again, where we actually engage them in helping us to step through, walk through in a live clinic setting what that protocol will look like, again, before we approve them. So that's two pieces of work that we've been doing in the last year that we really believe are important to engaging sites at a different level and trying to use some pretty creative technology solutions to really reduce the cost of those types of interactions.
Very cool. Thanks, Jackie. So I know a lot of your work as well is going into the portal initiative at Transcelerate. And for those of you that aren't familiar, there's a great online resource for more information about Transcelerate. Pfizer's a member, Lilly's a member, so two of the three participants' companies are members, and now SCRS is engaged with Transcelerate as well. So I suppose in terms of full disclosure, we all have some connection point to Transcelerate. There are a number of initiatives under Transcelerate from the original five that are very much facing the investigator. Site qualification and training meant to provide, say, mutual recognition of GCP training through certificates that can be issued or other ways to try to standardize some of the startup process. There is risk-based monitoring, which certainly changes some of the work that's facing the investigator site, and certainly the portal initiative. Jackie, do you want to provide a couple of bullets for us about what the portal is meant to achieve?
Sure. When we started down the path of how we wanted to look at an investigator platform, we really wanted to focus the priorities on the site. And the intent of that was to really open the door to how every sponsor that's part of Transcelerate interacted with the site and come to common processes. And we knew if we looked at the sponsor's view of it first, we'd never achieve the long-term vision that we wanted, and we wanted a set of common processes across the industry for interactions with the site. What it allows us to do by setting that vision at such a high level is now we can take any process that we all do and we can then start moving it through the system. So if you think about the CV, or you think about training records, or you think about just the exchange of any of your startup documents, today we all do them in different portals. Some of it is on paper. The intent is to create this platform where we can all do that together in one manner to the site. And hopefully, downstream a bit, we hope to be able to engage regulators in a virtual inspection or a virtual review type of mechanism where they won't have to necessarily visit either the sponsor or the site, where we can create the ability for them to view the documents that they're asking for in a virtual manner. That's what we're trying to do at a very high level.
That is definitely ambitious. Christine, does that resonate to the sites? Are sites aware that such an effort is underway? Does that feel like it's going the right direction in terms of addressing some challenges of redundancy and working across multiple sponsors?
I think absolutely. You know, as the sites become more cognizant of the resource utilization being required by them implementing all of these various studies, this kind of an activity, once fully executed, we can all foresee just tremendous savings, and we're enthusiastically supportive of the investigator portal, as well as, you know, the site qualification training. When we think about the number of opportunities that the site was given to answer that they in fact know GCP training for all of the sponsors that they do studies with each and every year, I believe it was one of the reasons why physicians decided this industry was getting too much. It was too redundant. It was inefficient, and there had to be a better way with a better ROI. So these initiatives that you've discussed here, the sites couldn't be happier about. Risk-based monitoring, totally different discussion, but SQT and portal activity we're very enthusiastic about.
Excellent. So there's this exciting new role that you were hinting at of SCRS engaging with Transcelerate, finding ways to insert and make sure that voice of the site is being captured in these different work streams. What is that? What does that look like, Christine? How is that meant to play out?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's not just for Transcelerate, so I do want to take a moment to applaud Lilly. They were actually the very first sponsor to join SCRS and request a site advocacy group, as was actually named by some collaboration with Jeff Kasher over there at Lilly and the SCRS team. So the site advocacy groups really grew out of the conversation that some of the Transcelerate members heard at last year's Site Solutions Summit, which is our annual meeting for the society, when we presented some data on RBM and its impact on the sites, because Transcelerate did a wonderful job of writing up the Transcelerate paper, and others have been talking internally, but how it included the sites and the impact on the sites was really not paid, in our opinion, a significant amount of attention. So the site advocacy groups really grew from that, and then I think as the other workstream leaders of Transcelerate and Lilly became aware of it, they said, let's create these site advocacy groups. So they are comprised of types of sites, geographic reach, and types of job performance based upon the requester's need. And so right now we have more than a half a dozen that are being launched. And as we suspect it, the sites are just abundantly enthusiastic. It's, you know, it's the first time that on a large scale, aside from the things that Lilly does and Pfizer and others of you do with your niche sites that maybe you have tight relationships with, this was opened up to all the sites and said, come and bring us your ideas. We want to hear about what our thinking is and how it truly is aligned or not with what's actually happening. So the SAGs, as we affectionately call them, are, you know, I think they're going to be incredibly powerful tool for everyone. It also will allow the sites to hear some of the constraints from the other side, right? So I think that's going to be an indirect benefit that we maybe didn't go into this anticipating.
That's great. That's great. Which other, which of the Transcelerate work streams will be taking advantage? Is it primarily the site right now? It sounds like there are some positive feelings about the site qualification and training. Will there be other work streams as well, maybe even risk-based monitoring?
There is, absolutely. So I wish I knew them all off the top of my head, and I don't, maybe either one of you can help me, but it is the five, so SQT, RBM, the portal, the investigator data bank, or the investigator database, and I can't think of the fifth one.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, there were the initial five included data standards with CDISC and the Comparator Drug Network, but the investigator registry is one of the newer work streams under Transcelerate.
Right, and that is one. And then we left open the door of some of the others, and it will only be those things that directly or indirectly impact the site. So comparator drug analysis, that, you know, sites probably would not have a whole lot to add to that. So it'll be those work streams that will have a direct or indirect impact on the sites.
Great, great. I think that voice sounds interesting. Jackie, as the lead for the portal work stream, how do you see taking advantage of that voice going forward? It sounds like at Lilly, you guys, you know, from the examples you gave earlier and from the note that Christine made, give some experience there in trying to leverage that voice. How do you see capturing it in this case?
Well, we've just begun our planning, and I think we have a really great opportunity. We're in our partnership in the development of the actual platform, we've created what we're calling usability workshops, and there's a series of four, but it's from where you start your development life cycle to when we release release a version of the software. And the first one is very much a wireframe type of visual of how we want the requirements to function. But in the second one, we plan to bring four or six of the people from our SAG in to actually have the customer, the voice of the site, actually sitting in the room while we go through the functionality. We really want to understand, not just from a high level, that document exchange is helpful or safety mailings is helpful, but really have them talk about how they do their work on a daily basis to make sure our business processes and the flow of the information is really usable for them. You know, this will be the first time we also try a single sign-on, and so we really need to understand if these authentication processes are going to be as easy as all the vendors tell us they will be. And so that will be a really interesting piece of the work that we want to do. And so we've built in our four different usability sessions that we will run from the beginning of development to release, we've built them into three of those. We also believe the continuity of having a SAG is much better than each individual pharma trying to reach out and bring one or two, right? We think that continuity, that learning, that consistency of the same group of people that can kind of grow and help us deliver the strategy is also important.
Excellent. Hey, Christine, it sounded like there's some hesitation, reservation about risk-based monitoring from the investigator community. You know, we try to encourage, you know, so many folks to take this yes-and approach to try and, you know, try and build on someone's idea or help them to pivot that idea to be enhanced or better or stronger. What message would sites share to those that are advocating or trying to drive risk-based monitoring that would help address some of the shortcomings that sites may see around RBM or some of the concerns that sites have about the implementation?
I think, as we start any new venture of this magnitude, there's going to be a lot of confusion. And what we are finding is the R in RBM is being confused with regard to what its intent was as we look at risk-based monitoring under a quality by design portfolio. So what sites are experiencing that some sponsors and CROs are calling RBM is truly not risk-based monitoring. It really doesn't have an algorithm behind it, and we're not looking at data real-time, et cetera. But what in fact it is remote-based monitoring. And with remote-based monitoring, the impetus is being put on the site to carry out many more steps than were required before. So that has created a bifurcation among the site community of adoption and lack thereof. When you're asking a site to fax in or scan in documentation of whether it's investigational product records or it's source documents, we all know that the intent of RBM was never for that kind of activity to occur, right? That's indeed what's happening. So it's reminiscent of those of us that have been around a long time of when we migrated from paper case report forms to electronic case report forms, and we used to call it remote data entry. And there was a lot of pain associated from the site side of migration to what we now know is, you know, just EDC, and it's easy, and sites would want to, you know, be up in arms if you wanted them to write in black ink and, you know, triple carbonless paper. So some of it is this migration of just the adoption of what is truly RBM from the sponsors and the CRO's perspective. The second element that sites are really finding incredibly time-consuming is all of the point people that they now have to interface with. And now we see some of the sponsors and CROs, more the CROs saying that we're moving from CRAs to site managers, and to think that some of these people actually have the skills or the experience to truly be, quote, remote site managers is causing some stress at the site level, because they're saying, no, these are just, they used to be monitors and now they're being called site managers. So I need to talk to my remote site manager. I need to talk to my CRA who comes in periodically. And I now need to talk to this new person who's managing my data. And so now it's amplified times, you know, a multiple of at least three of the amount of time that the site is being expected to interface with the other party. And the sites are saying, you know, we didn't put this in our budget. This was not allocated for. And it's just inefficient at its basic level. So the sites are requesting, and it's pretty loud and clear, that as RBM processes are being developed, that you identify one individual internally, and that individual be responsible for filtering the messages to the appropriate people within your organization or your CRO.
So it sounds like a communication gap in terms of trying to streamline that, and but that ultimately perhaps this can take a course maybe a little faster but a little less bumpy, but down that same trajectory of electronic data capture, that hopefully this is a win for everyone. Perhaps these are just some bumps in terms of growing pains.
I think that's true. I think we did a big survey last year, and we're just about finishing the final touches on, you know, RBM and its impact to the sites, and that white paper will be coming out in the next couple, probably 6 weeks. One of the other basic elements that I think, speaking on behalf of the sites, is that there's a real inconsistent message. So first, RBM was believed by the sites to be a cost-saving mechanism for industry, and the feeling that so now it's just being pushed down on us, the sites, and we're going to have to absorb this additional workload, et cetera. The second message that's coming out of industry, and I don't think industry pushed that first message. That was just what was being propagated by, you know, the forces that are within our bigger enterprise. We're doing a lot to try to dispel that notion among the site community and saying there may, in fact, not be any cost savings to sponsors on an absolute basis, that the cost may just be being shifted to, especially on the data side. But I think industry would be well served to ensure that message on their own is being communicated to the sites. And then the second is really the whole misnomer and misplacement of what truly RBM is about, which is to provide greater patient safety data. So I think that needs to be the prevailing message to the sites, and again, we do a lot to promote that. And then the last element, and it goes back to your first question, is so now if you're getting your data in, quote, real time, and we are creating some best practices, and one of them is the timeliness of how data should be put in. It should not be 45 days. It really should be much more real time, and we'll be publicizing these best site practices in the fall once we're done working with all the stakeholders. But it's going to push industry to then answer the question to sites of, so now you're getting your data in real time, and why is it that the sites are still not being paid for 90 days? So I think it's going to open up Pandora's box a little bit that industry didn't quite expect.
What else do you think, just turning back to Transcelerate, what else do you think Transcelerate could be doing for the site? What else would sites want to see Transcelerate prioritize in the months and years ahead? And now I'll start with Christine, and then Jackie, I'll look for your feedback there as well.
Yeah, I think that ours, quite honestly, Craig, at this point, I think Transcelerate has a pretty full platform, and the, you know, half a dozen initiatives that are directly focused on the site are things that are going to be incredibly beneficial to the site. The site portal, I'm absolutely with Jackie. We've got to see how this works. And once we get through that first door, how do we then migrate our way among all of their members? One of the elements that we do have a question about, and bring it up often, and some of it may just play out, is so Transcelerate's got X number of members, but what about all the sponsors that are not Transcelerate members? Are they going to be willing to adopt these standards? Even SQT, you know, are they going to be able to recognize the, or willing to recognize the Transcelerate, quote, endorsed training, and that will suffice? So we would really want to see the initiatives that Transcelerate is working on that are decreasing the stress and the expectations from a resource utilization, not quality, to the sites, can those be implemented beyond and adopted beyond the Transcelerate members?
And Jackie, I imagine no one's plate is as full as yours with Transcelerate right now, but are there other things that you would want to see Transcelerate doing in the months and years ahead that are site-facing?
So I'm kind of a little bit more aligned with Christine right now. I think the most important thing for us to do is to deliver the things that we have on the current roadmap, because I think they will set ourselves up for a platform where we'll be able to see what's next. I believe we need to get out there and we actually need to implement more. So we did a lot with SQT last year. I think the risk-based monitoring white paper and the pilots that have been at some of the first adopting companies have been great, but I think it's got to really be focused on delivery in 2014 and 15 so we can really see what the next set of initiatives should be that are so engaged at the site. I really hope that the platform allows us to just open up a whole set of opportunities that we can just keep putting more and more functionality into the site in a single set of business processes.
So just as our time starts to wrap together, Jackie, I wonder if I could look to you to play forecaster, futurist, if you will. What are you excited about over the next 5 years as you look at this space, 24 years at Eli Lilly now? Clearly, they hired you in 1990 at the age of 5 or 6. But as you're looking at those 5, 7 years out right now, what are you really excited about this this new future state that everyone seems to be working towards?
So what I like about what we're doing right now is I hate to call some of the things we're doing from a technology perspective as innovative, because I think in many cases we're creating a baseline, and I hope that that baseline of simplifying those business processes allows the investigators to treat more patients, to bring more medicine to patients faster. Because I think what we're doing is I'm hoping we're taking burden off their plates to allow them to be seeing, treating, and enhancing the lives of more people. I think we've created, in all of our attempts in the industry to get more medicine to patients, what we've actually done is created a lot of burden to the site. And that's actually not been our intent, but I think that's what's happened. And so I'm really excited about being very focused on the next 2 years where we can simplify their lives and make their paper processes go away, give them easy, simple, and effective technology to allow them to deliver for all of us more medicine to patients.
Fabulous. That's what it's about at the end of the day, right? It's to serve patients. Christine, what about you? As you look out and you've been in this field for a while now and you're looking out at those next 5, 7 years, what are you excited about as you see different movement in the industry today?
So at SCRS, one of the things we're incredibly enthusiastic about, in addition to, you know, couldn't say it more eloquently than what Jackie did, but an area that we're paying a lot of attention to right now is the investigator turnover rate. And we have submitted and been approved to do a project with Citi, with the Transformational Initiative program with Duke and FDA and all the other various stakeholders. But we're looking at investigator turnover, that I think that while all of these burdens that we're placing on sites are absolutely causing the, 40 to 50% of all of our investigators doing one and done and getting out, that until we really understand what's driving that hemorrhaging of our investigators' landscape, we are going to be impotent to make any significant changes for the sites to help them be sustainable, which is our goal. We want sites to be sustainable, and we want to move them from doing one and done to being absolutely part of our community. And if they are what we refer to as the dabblers, doing just a couple of studies, then obviously they have somewhat of a commitment, and we need to migrate them up to doing becoming part of the triangle that we call the doers. And so understanding what's driving the investigator turnover rate, I think, is fundamental to creating a landscape of investigators that will truly go the distance with us in this partnership with all of the other stakeholders. And we're starting on that project right now. We anticipate it'll take the next 18 to 24 months until we report back all the results. But I think until we look at the disease, all of these other things that we're focusing on, which are critical, and I'm not suggesting we divert our attention, but these are really addressing the symptoms, and we really need to get down to the disease, which is the investigator turnover, in our opinion.
Well, it's got to be a sustainable ecosystem, right? It's this whole notion of our lacking infrastructure to support clinical development and the development of new medicines and getting those to patients, and this whole transactional model burns out those vital resources. How can we ensure that, you know, those investigators and others have pathways to develop and stick around and partner for the duration? This has been great. I knew having Christine and Jackie on the line together would be an easy conversation, and that time would fly by, and it certainly did. I look forward to seeing you both over the next few weeks and months of conferences before the summer, and then right after the summer, once things like the Disruptive Innovations Conference kick in September. With that, I'll say thanks and turn you back over to Val.
Craig, thank you. Christine and Jackie, thank you. And Christine, can you tell us, for more information about the Site Solutions Summit, where can people go? What's the website?
Oh, thanks, Val. They can go to sitesolutionssummit.com.
Excellent. Okay, thank you all so much for a great show, and we'll speak to you soon. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.